A Podcast One production.
I'm Sammy Lucas, and I'm romantically challenged. One thing I'm really loving about making this podcast is realizing that so many of us are facing the same struggles in the modern dating world. What I've also realized is that so far the podcast has been unintentionally focused on heterosexual dating. So I was so delighted to receive a message on Instagram from a gay guy named Adam who said that he loves the podcast, he shares it with all his friends, and he actually uses it like therapy. Adam also has very kindly offered to come on the podcast and chat to me about just how similar or different dating is as a gay man. Here's Adam.
Hi, my name is Adam, and I'm a male in my late 30s. I enjoy great coffee, too much of it, good wine, good food, time with my friends and family, and my two dogs. I work as an operations manager, and I've been single now for about 4 years after the end of my last long-term relationship. My ideal partner would have a killer smile, he'd be a bit taller than me, he'd be educated, intelligent, and established in his own right. Dating in my 30s has been an adventure, sometimes scary, but always exhilarating.
Adam, thank you so much for taking the time to message me, and thanks for listening. I love that you said that the podcast is like a form of therapy for you.
Oh, it absolutely has been. I'm telling everybody I know that I'm listening to this, and they should too. I'm really pushing it on my best friend.
Oh, thank you. And look, I'm not paying you to do this. Can we just get that clear?
No, definitely not.
Why does it feel like therapy?
I think my last long-term relationship ended sort of close to 4 years ago now, and I have done therapy since then, but there's a couple of podcasts that really resonated with me. There was the Soulmate one, of course.
Yes.
And there was a couple of others, you know, the woman whose marriage ended really abruptly, he decided he didn't want to be a husband and father anymore, and suddenly she was on her own with these children, you know, carving her way again. And yeah. I think when a relationship ends, you can feel just lost and what is the next step? And I don't know where to go from here. So just listening to those people tell those stories and the strength that it took. And, you know, these are people with children. I don't have children, but just, you know, their feelings and their fears really resonated with me. And listening to it made me think about decisions and what I want and what I need. And yeah, it really, really struck a chord. And I think, you know, you've spoken to several of your guests about, you know, dating now that apps exist, Tinder and Bumble and whatever they are. And, you know, there's some exclusively gay apps as well. But it's the same thing. You know, you're seeing this large pool of people and they're seeing you. And that feeling of, I think, of rejection or it's so much more heightened. I mean, it's not even people you're engaging with that say no thank you. It's the people that aren't at all. And you think, you know, hello, I'm right here. And there's, you know, hundreds of you. So I think that struggle is the same. You know, if you're looking for love, you know, I've heard you say before, it's a numbers game. And I think that's relevant for everybody.
Well, you've kind of got to be out there meeting people, haven't you?
Absolutely.
Otherwise, you know, as I always say, he's not going to come knocking on your door unless the Thai delivery guy turns up and he's super hot.
Why can't he knock on the door, though? That would be so helpful.
Oh, it would be convenient, wouldn't it? Especially if he was bringing a nice bottle of gin.
Yeah. Or, you know, like in the movies when you're walking around the corner with the shopping and they bump into you and you drop it and then there's the meet cute when you pick it up. Like, I can't keep dropping groceries in the street hoping someone will come down and help me pick it up.
Hey, did you ever date women? Or have you only ever been interested in men?
No, I have dated women too. I dated a girl, I guess you'd call her the high school sweetheart. It was, you know, it was very new and, you know, innocent and romantic and all of that kind of thing. That went for a couple of years. And then there was one other girl after that that was a serious relationship that probably went for 3 years. But I came out to her at the end.
At the end of that relationship, so that's a big thing to do, to come out, but also to come out to the woman you're in a long-term relationship with. That must have taken a lot of courage.
It did. I was nearly, well, yeah, I'm sure, and so many men will be will tell you the story that have been in similar situations. I was physically ill. I knew I had to do it. I'd gone to work that day and I'd spoken to a very close colleague about the about what had happened because there was an incident. And I said, I have to do this. I have to do it tonight. And I am one of those people, if I've got to do it, I move quickly. And I knew it was the right thing to do. I knew it was going to be awful. I knew it was going to be awful for her. And after the initial shock and freak out, she was very, very good.
So how long ago did you come out? How many years ago?
That was 2001.
Right, so it was about 18 years ago.
It was a month after my 21st birthday.
So you mentioned an incident. Can you tell me what that incident was? And you don't need to share it.
No, it's fine. It was, it's interesting. I have to say, there was always a level of attraction to men. You know, the classic question that gay men get asked so often is, oh, but did you always know? Or how long did you know? Or there's always something there. And I just couldn't put my finger on it. There was an attraction to men, but in my mind, it was envy. I wish I looked like that. You know, and I'm sure women do that with each other as well. I wish I had her figure or that dress or whatever. There was that, but there was always just something that unsettling about it, and I couldn't verbalize it. In my ideal world, I wanted to be married with children and the white picket fence, and I thought, well, if I want that, I must be straight. But anyway, there was a family birthday party. My girlfriend at the time was there. A cousin of hers was there who was clearly gay but still in the closet at the time. And everybody had been on the dance floor, and then I went to the toilet, and then I went into the bathroom to wash my hands, and he came into the bathroom to wash his hands. And there'd been a lot of champagne consumed, and he said to me, you know, I've always really liked you and this and that and this and that. I said, oh, you know, I brushed it off. Don't be silly. You've been drinking, blah, blah, blah. And he grabbed me by the shoulders and he swung me around and he kissed me. And it was hands down the most exciting, heart-thumping thing that had ever happened to me.
This is your girlfriend's cousin.
Yeah. Yeah.
But was it not just the adrenaline of you shouldn't be doing this, or it was knowing?
There was a little bit of that, absolutely, in the moment. And I sort of pushed out of the kiss after probably a beat too long. But I pushed out. I said, we've both been drinking. Don't be silly. We're going back out. And we went out to the party and the night was continued on. But I went home to bed that night with her, laying in a bed next to someone thinking, oh, my life has shifted completely. I knew then and there. And I told her 2 days later.
That's a story. It's like a movie, isn't it? It is like a scene from a movie.
It is when I say it back now, and a couple of people have said that to me, but at the time, my God, it just, the commotion that it caused and the fact that it was her cousin, I didn't lie to her. I went to see him and said, I knew where he worked, and I walked in and I said, I'm going to tell her. And he said, oh God, you can't. And I said, no, it's the right thing to do. I know that I'm gay and I'm going to be honest with her. I won't lie.
Good on you. Do you know what? I could talk to you for hours about that whole coming out, and that whole experience, but we are here to talk about dating.
Yes,
so
yes.
We'll save that for a bottle of wine somewhere.
Okay, sure.
One night. So you have been in relationships as a straight man and dated as a straight man, and now for 18 years you've been dating as a gay man.
Yes.
How would you describe dating as a gay man in the modern dating scene?
Oh, it's exhausting, but I think you'd say that about the straight scene.
Yes, it is. It can be exhausting.
Gosh.
Frustrating, disappointing, disheartening, hilarious,
Where is he? I'm probably at my most peaceful with it now, though. You know, I've gone through the phase of I have to meet him, and then phases where I didn't want to talk to anybody. And now I'm really, really at peace with it in my life. I enjoy my life. I'm at a really good time. I'm meeting some lovely people. If they stay, they stay. If they come and go, that's okay too. But it's not easy. And I don't live in a huge town. So I would say that the pool of gay men is smaller. And a lot of people say, well, then you should just move to Melbourne or you should just move to Sydney. And that isn't the answer for me. You know, my work is where I live, my friends and my family are there, and that's where I want to be. So I want through whatever means to find him, you know, roughly where I live.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess Melbourne is kind of within reach.
Yes.
If you met someone in Melbourne, yes. I know you're sort
and
of
I have,
an hour
I have, yeah, I know I have dated people in Melbourne before, and that's great. That's fine. Yeah.
So I do know that the male gay dating scene is kind of very loosely divided into two camps, pardon the pun. There's those who just want to have a lot of sex, yep. open relationships, very promiscuous.
Yeah.
And then there's guys like my husband who just really want to find a partner and a serious yeah. relationship and settle down. Would you say that's what you've experienced as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, we all go through phases in our life where we grow up and we do just want to date and we do just want to have sex and we're not looking to settle down. But I think when you're lucky enough to find that person, and we all know how hard it is to find that right person, you know, don't share them. You know, keep them for yourself. And, you know, that I know that that's a very specific opinion and it's not for everybody, and I certainly don't want to be telling people how to live their life. But I meet these guys in open relationships, and I think, you know, I think it would just cause so many issues. There must be feelings of insecurity and jealousy there at some point. I just think that, in my opinion, something must be missing if it isn't enough.
But there are so many gay couples that are committed to each other, living together, potentially now even married to one another,
yes.
but they do still have an open relationship. And I think that's kind of the difference, the main difference, with the straight scene is that if you, for the majority, and look, some people have open relationships, but
yeah.
I don't know if I'm completely out of line here, but I would suspect the majority of serious straight relationships are based on monogamy.
I wonder whether it's a thing that gay men talk about it and straight people don't. You know, we've all heard the sign, you know, from either a wife or a husband that they said, oh, look, I know he's had someone on the side and I just didn't want to believe it. I just didn't want to talk about it. I chose not to talk about it. So I'm wondering whether gay men choose to talk about it so it does seem so much more prevalent.
So straight people are doing it, but they're just hiding it.
Well,
gay men are a bit more open about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I think so. I said to a lady that I know, I said to her the other day, because she's mentioned a couple of times that she's in an open relationship, and I don't know her well enough to get right into it, but I knew I was coming on this podcast. I said, I have questions. And I said to her, who brought it up first? Because someone must raise the fact that we want something outside this relationship. And she said, well, I did. And I said, what would the outcome have been if he had have said, no, absolutely not? And she said, well, I probably would have felt flattered because I would have felt that he really loved me. I said, okay, so now it's been going on for a period of time. What if he turned around and said, I've had enough, I don't want this anymore? She said, oh, I probably would leave him.
Wow.
So none of it's making sense in my head.
But is it better to have an agreed open relationship or to just be cheating in secret? I mean,
no, I think cheating just leads to heartbreak. I really do. And I don't know that, I'm sure in some instances open relationships lead to heartbreak too, because people go down this road and they probably, you know, don't know how to bring it back. But I think if there's an agreement between two people that this works for both of us, then, you know, you've got to do what's right for you, and every couple is different. But I feel that there must be certain circumstances where one partner goes along with it for the sake of the other. And I think that is potentially very hurtful.
So do you have that kind of conversation very early on when you're dating? What are you looking for? Like, are you looking for monogamy and marriage and, you know, settling down? Or do you want an open relationship? Or do you just want to catch up casually for a few months?
I don't know that I'd talk open relationships and monogamy on the first date, but I certainly, I've met so many people in the last sort of 18 months to 2 years who are in open relationships, and it's made me think maybe I do need to really, you know, say this out loud early on because I don't want to go down that road. But I haven't had to have the discussion about open relationships with the men that I've dated. It has always sort of, I don't know, I've never found somebody like that. So I guess that's lucky for me.
So on that point, there is something that I know happens in the gay dating scene that does not happen in the straight dating scene. And that is a conversation very early on, if not the first date, about who's on PrEP.
Yes.
Do you want to explain what PrEP is to people who might not know what it is and why it's so important to talk about it early on?
I don't have all of the medical information, so don't quote me too heavily, but there is PrEP, P-R-E-P, and then there's PEP, P-E-P. So PrEP is a medication that is classified as pre-exposure. It is an for men who are, you know, openly dating, who are having sex with a variety of people. It is an antiviral drug against HIV. So you take PrEP, men take PrEP like women take the pill. It's something that they take every day. It's in the bloodstream, so that if HIV is introduced into their bloodstream, there's a very, very high percentage that PrEP will detect that and kill that, which is extraordinary in the day and age that we live in. And there are third world countries that should have access to this drug. And then PEP is post-exposure. So if you haven't been taking anything and you have had unprotected sex with someone, you then learn, you know, is a possibility of being a HIV carrier. PEP is something that you can take to potentially, again, treat that within the bloodstream.
Is that an awkward conversation to have with someone, or it's just kind of, you just, that's just what you do when you're on a date?
I haven't raised it on a date, to tell you the truth. Some of the gay dating apps or social, I'm going to say hookup apps, Sammy, there you go, I said
yeah.
it.
Like Grinders.
Grinder and Scruff and apps like that, they actually talk to your status and your treatment. So a lot of people's profiles will say negative on PrEP, or that they use condoms, or that they are positive but undetectable. You know, people are very much encouraged to disclose that information.
Yeah, and it's
people,
amazing.
People do it willingly. And, you know, yep. there are even, you can, on Grindr, I think it is, you can actually put the date of your last test results.
Gee, that's amazing. So it's so really, responsible and, you know.
It's amazing. I actually, I'm one of the 8% of people that can't take PrEP though. As a single man who is dating, I thought I'd do the responsible thing and went to my doctor, and I had to have a battery of tests and, you know, kidney function and all that kind of thing, because it was something that I'd be taking every day. And slowly but surely over the course of the first 2 weeks, I became quite dizzy and nauseous, and which can be a bit of a side effect. But then I was running with my personal trainer one day and I nearly fainted. He had to sit me down on the footpath. So it just turns out that I'm one of the rare few that whose body doesn't like it. So
what is your dating goal then?
Look, I really enjoy dating, to tell you the truth. I even go on dates with the men that I know that I'm probably not going to spark with, because even if we have great conversation and we get along well and we have a fun time having a drink together or a coffee or whatever, I really, really enjoy that. But in terms of Mr. Right, I'm much more selective. And so if I feel it's something, you know, if I feel they're showing interest in more of a romantic side, I'm much more selective, knowing what I do and don't want and do and don't need too. So
I don't know how I feel about you going on dates with people you're not really that keen on. I mean, couldn't that be seen as kind of time wasting?
Yes. My best friend says that to me all the time. She says, please don't lead them on. And I know, I make sure not to do that. But you know, like if someone says to me, oh, I'd really love to meet you sometime, or really love to catch up, I try and make it sound casual from the beginning. Yeah, a coffee would be great, you know, or whatever, you know. So if they sort of suggesting dinner and I suggest a drink, I try and pull it back a little bit. But I think the reason that I have done that is, and I don't want to be a time waster, and I certainly don't want to lead anybody on, but for someone that had come from a long-term relationship, it was about sort of getting dates under my belt and finding my confidence in it again. So that's probably why I did that. And I've gone on some horrors, as I'm sure everybody has. But yeah, it was probably, yeah, about finding that confidence again.
So it was kind of not so much using dating as a band-aid for loneliness, but more of building your confidence in just putting yourself out there.
You know,
I guess it's like a lot of things in life. The more you do it, the better you get at it, and the more comfortable you are at it. Because if you haven't dated for a long time and then you launch yourself on the dating scene, that first date traumatic.
It's traumatic. That's the right word for it. You could vomit. So for me it was, and you know, after the end of my last relationship, I was quite broken and I really didn't know where I was going to go. So the first person that asked me out, I said no. And the second person that asked me out, I said no. And my friends nudged and said, just do this. Just go and have a drink. And I did that first time. I'm like, okay, I can do this. This is okay. So I started to say yes to a few more people and go from there.
Tell me how you date then. So is it all online?
At the moment it is. Oh, yeah, no, look, it really has been. I think My closest friends in the world are female. I've got some great male friends, don't get me wrong, and I've got a handful of really great gay male friends. But my best friend in the world is female, and my closest sort of knit of people are female. So, and I spend a lot of time with them. So I think that when we're out and about, I'm probably not necessarily screaming gay. I think probably people, certainly when I'm with my best friend, they probably go, oh, look at that couple, or oh, I wonder if she knows her husband's gay. So I think it really limits the idea that someone might approach you in a bar or offer to buy you a drink because they think that you're with that girl. And I'm sure it happens the other way around for her as well.
You haven't got to that part in my book yet where I talk about how my husband Tim and I overcame this very issue.
Oh, no, I haven't. I'm sorry.
We tell everyone we're brother and sister and it disarms them immediately. We make it really clear.
How has that never occurred to me?
Yeah, we just make a point of mentioning very loudly in the vicinity something about my brother or my sister and watch them. It's very disarming for people.
Good. Well, we're going to dinner tonight, so I'm going to use that.
Use it. So if the hot waiter comes over, then you can go, oh, my sister here.
My sister will have this.
She's going to have this or, yeah.
Oh, I can't believe that's never occurred to me.
So you've got your female besties, but do you sort of go out to gay clubs or do you solely date online?
No, I've never really done the gay club scene. It never sat inside my comfort zone. And it was probably, you know, lack of confidence. Someone who came out in their early 20s and it, you know, if it was to be a gay club, I was going to have to, you know, travel to Melbourne for that. And, you know, I guess in my mind, and this is a projection I put on myself, you know, I'm not the ideal shape. I'm certainly not. I don't consider myself to be overweight, but I don't have pecs and I don't have abs. And if I walk into a gay club in Melbourne, half the room is going to have their shirts off and I'm just going to feel bad about myself. So I just sort of stayed away. I always liked a really sort of balanced circle of friends. You know, my straight friends hang with my gay friends and we all go to beautiful restaurants and beautiful wine bars and things like that. That's really sort of more my scene, but I've never really got into the exclusive gay club scene.
It is such a big issue, the body image issue. I watch my gay friends as well. Mm. And, you know, I mean, that is an issue that, you know, as a straight person, I've never really felt has overwhelmed me to the point where I wouldn't go out to a bar or nightclub because I'm going to feel so inferior to people, you know, to other women because they have amazing bodies.
Yeah.
It's such a shame that that's so, such a big issue in the gay scene.
I think it's, and you know, I'm sure more gay men that would say it than me. It's, you know, but I know it's something I'm projecting on myself. You know, I like nightclubs and I like restaurants and I like bars and I have no problem with getting out on the dance floor. But I would pick a really good outfit. You know, I'd pick my wardrobe really selectively before I go, like most people would. So to arrive at a club thinking, yeah, I look really, really great, and then the guy next to me on the dance floor is in hot pants, it's like, oh God, I'm just, please, I want to go home and have some Cadbury.
But isn't it just as superficial online?
Yes.
Like I've watched on Grindr and Tinder with Gusband and I mean it is
Do you
the
help him with the
most,
selection process?
Absolutely, but he never listens to me because he always goes for those meatheads and I prefer not.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of that business with shirts off and pecs and all the rest of it online. Yeah. So isn't that a bit confronting as well?
Yes. It is. I don't necessarily go for that type of profile. I really have issues when someone won't show their face. I mean, if they're not showing their face, they're either in the closet, they're often married and looking for something on the side, and neither of those things is for me at 39 years old. So if someone starts talking to me, I always say hello. If the profile is blank or if the profile is showing something other than their face and they say hello, I always say hello back. But, you know, within two sentences into the conversation, I say, may I see your face, please? And if they won't show it, then I'm not interested.
How many married men do you think have hit on you?
Oh, lots.
Have you actually been on dates with guys and found out they're married?
No. Not that they've ever confessed. Now I'm wondering. No, that hasn't. I haven't been on a date and found that out. I've been on dates with divorced men who have come out. I was recently hit on by a married man who's only been married for 3 months to a man. I was really annoyed. I said to him, "You've got what we all want." You know, you stood up in front of friends and family not 3 months ago and declared, you know, your love for this man. Don't be a dick. But no, it's just because if it ever happened to me, I'd be devastated and I can't do it to anybody else.
I think with Tinder in the straight world, it's kind of, you know, people still see it as a bit of a hookup app, but then there's also people who are looking for serious relationships.
Yeah.
Whereas I think in the gay world, Grindr is purely Grindr, right? Or, or do love stories come from Grindr?
Oh, I'm sure they do, but where are they? it's a very specific, it's generally a very specific purpose. I have had some lovely conversations and I have met some lovely guys, but generally, no, it's purely athletic.
Now, tell me about this gay matchmaker you went to, or you thought of going to.
I thought of going to, yes. So I'd done, you know, years ago I did RSVP and then I tried the whole, and then I was in a relationship after that. And then after my last relationship ended, Tinder had arrived. I thought, I'll give this a go. And I must say, I was so naive. I thought it was all about love, Sammy. When people started saying, oh my God, it's a total hookup. It's just, I'm like, really? I thought I was going to have, you know, a wonderful date. And they're like, no, they're after a specific thing. So I was a little bit blind to that. So I'd done with the swiping with Tinder, and then you'd match with someone and you'd say hello and they wouldn't speak, or you'd have two sentences and they'd unmatch. I think, oh, good Lord, you know, get to know me before you reject me. And then I was on a flight somewhere and, you know, the in-flight magazine in the aeroplane, there was a gay matchmaking service advertised, like the old school. You go in, you meet with these people, they, you know, you answer a million questions and they write a profile and then they match you with their database of people. I thought, oh, how old world romantic. I have to try this. So, and the, you know, their advertising, of course, was gorgeous and, you know, men in suits and all that kind of thing. I thought, yes, this is me.
It was classy.
It was classy. And I thought, I am a classy guy. So I gave this company a call. I spoke to a lovely woman who said so-and-so would be in touch with me. He was one of the directors. And I really got it. I thought, this is great. We'd set up a meeting time, et cetera, et cetera. The email confirmation came through with their agreement, should I choose to proceed. And I can't remember the figure exactly. It was definitely more than $10,000. Less than 20. I want to say like $13,000 to $15,000. And I went, oh, look, I'm terribly sorry. I certainly understood there would be a cost involved. I felt that it would be more substantial than, you know, a premium subscription to Tinder. But I was not anticipating, you know, several months of mortgage payments.
Wow.
So, and they said, look, what we'd like to point out to you is that is, you know, that is a once-off fee. That's not a, you know, a month or 6 months. You know, we will work for as long as it takes. And I said, look, I really do appreciate that and thank you so much, but no.
$13,000. That's like a lifetime membership.
They'd be making a fortune. I mean, I'm sure their I hope their success rate is really, really high. I don't know. The imagery looked really good. But I couldn't do it.
I'd be curious to know if they're still in business.
Mm.
So when you meet someone online, do you go for a cocktail? Do you go for a walk? Do you go for a coffee date or just straight into dinner? Have you got sort of an approach that works?
My general rule is I do the drink or the coffee because we all know it's an easy escape route if it's not going well. There's been a couple of times where, you know, I've been chatting to someone and the banter has been really good and they're a great speller and they use all the right punctuation and, you know, and we've been chatting and, you know, it's just the similar interests and all that kind of thing. And I think, you know what, I'm going to have dinner with this person. Sometimes that's a good idea. There's been occasions where it has not been. But no, generally I like to start with the coffee first, often in the middle of the day because you can always have emergency plans in the afternoon. If you need to.
Thought of that.
I told you I have dated Sammy.
You really have.
You know, I called my best friend last night and I said, look, Sammy and I, you know, we're going to be talking about dating. You know, I think this is my worst dating story. She goes, oh no, you've had worse than that. And I said to her, who's the worst? And she said, X, and named him. I said, I've got no idea who you're talking about. She said, X again. I'm like, I've got no idea who you're talking about. She said, the royalist. I went, oh, yes, of course. And this is a gentleman we had been chatting online for probably a week or so. We agreed to have dinner. It was very evident to me early on in the dinner that this was not going to be a thing for me. And as we were leaving, he had walked to the restaurant. He lived close by. And as we were leaving, it started to rain. I said, oh, please, I've got my car here. Let me just drive you around the corner. So I did, and he said when we pulled up, "Oh, thank you so much for driving me. Would you like a cup of tea?" I thought, "Oh, that's lovely. I can do that." Mm-hmm. So we went in and walked into this odd little house, and he put the kettle on and went into the bathroom. So I, you know, sat there and had a look around the kitchen and the dining room, and I looked over at the fridge, and it was covered in, you know, family photographs of, you know, brothers and sisters and children and Charles and Camilla and Barbara Streisand. And I said, "Oh, you're quite the royalist." And he said, "Oh, yes, I love them." And then I looked over at the calendar on the wall, and he had, you know, haircut, shopping, Dad's birthday, Bjorn's birthday, Barbara's birthday. And I said, "Bjorn? That's a, you know, you don't often hear that." And he said, "From ABBA." Oh, I said, "Oh, okay. You know, thank you so much for the tea. I have to go."
What's the most frustrating thing for you about dating?
I think for me, it's when you feel you're going down a certain road. You know, "Oh, this is clicking. This is working. He's interested in the same things I am. We both love our families." And you think there could be a possibility here. And then the landscape changes. For me, or motivation changes, and you're like, "Well, that's not what I thought it was." And I'm sure we've all been there. But yeah, it's that when you can feel the butterflies a little bit, and you can feel the bubbles, and then something pops.
You've started to invest and you think you're on the same path.
Yes.
And then
Yes.
And then they're not.
Yeah.
I know something that has happened to some of my friends is they start dating someone, it's very early on, but one of them or the guy they're dating says, "Oh, look, I've had this holiday planned with some friends, so I'm just not going to get serious with you."
Yes.
Let's just, and it's kind of frustrating, but yeah. Then at the same time, it happened
to me after dating for 3 months.
3 months?
3 months. Well, probably close to 3 months, but
what happened?
Oh, gosh. It was my first sort of relationship. I'm going to call it a relationship. It was my first relationship after my last breakup. You know, I'd had some good dates. I'd had some bad dates. I'd had some shockers. And then I met this man. And we just clicked. We clicked. We were both sort of, you know, in professional jobs, you know, the white-collar job. And we just, you know, we had similar interests and similar friendship groups, and he had been single for about the same amount of time as me and ultimately was looking for that person. You know, and we had some, you know, great, amazing dates, and it was clicking along well. And then one day he said to me, "You know, I'd like to throw a small dinner party for you to meet some of my friends." I'm like, "Oh, I am winning here." Mm. I call my best friend. I'm like, "We are on track. I'm going to be engaged by the end of the year." You know, and that went really well. I got along well with his friends. Well, I felt I did. You know, I got along well with his friends. And then my birthday was coming. And he said, "I'm going to come down to where you live." He lived about an hour away. He said, "I'm going to come down to where you live. I'm going to, you know, and we're going to have dinner." And, you know, my best friend, who can't keep a secret, said, "Oh, my God, he's totally been researching, you know, where to take you." And, "Oh, okay." And then he arrived and he had this massive bunch of flowers, and it was all just, you know, going well. But I must say, the day before, I'd said to my friend, my best friend, I said, something's not right here. I said, "It's clicking, but I feel like I'm being kept at arm's length." And she said, "For God's sake, don't bring it up on your birthday. Because if you don't get the answer you want, you're going to ruin your birthday." Mm-hmm. I said, "No, you're right, I won't. Anyway, we're at dinner and it's going along beautifully, and he's wee this and wee that and this and that. And I knew that he had a holiday planned to go to Asia. It's something that I'd known for the entire time I'd been seeing him. Anyway, we're chatting away, and lo and behold, I bring it up, don't I?
Couldn't help yourself.
God, I can feel myself rolling my eyes now. And I said, you know, that same thing. I said, "Look, this is going really well, but there's a part of me that just feels like you're keeping me at arm's length. Is everything okay?" And he looked at me and said, "Look, I really didn't want to bring this up tonight." I went, "Oh, God." I felt my stomach drop, and he said, "Look, you know, I am going away and this." And I said, "Yeah, of course." And he said, "You know, I just don't want to commit to you before I go." And I sat silently for a minute, just letting it sort of wash over me. I thought, okay, so the long and the short of it is he wants to sleep with people overseas.
Do you think that's what he was saying?
Well,
yeah,
probably. Yeah, he was. And I sort of, I got a little bit blunt, and I said that. And he goes, no, I'm not saying that it will happen. I'm just saying I need the option.
But then is that option going to be every time he goes on holidays?
Well,
From there on in?
I didn't go much further than that, Sammy. I must say, I went to the bathroom after that, and I took my phone out and I texted my friend. I said, "I did exactly what you told me not to do." I said, "My birthday is ruined."
Oh my God, the this was on your birthday.
Oh, this was my birthday dinner. It was the stupidest thing to do. But it, I must say, I felt a real moment of clarity with that conversation. Because, you know, we've all heard the things that we don't want to hear from people that we go on dates and, you know, our feelings don't align and all that kind of thing. And, you know, back when I was younger, I would have fought and said, but we could do this and we could do that and maybe this and maybe that. And I looked at him and said, you know what? That's fine, but it's not enough for me.
But and you know what? That is so spot on. And there's so many people that overlook obvious red flags and obvious flaws. And it takes a really strong person to have the honest conversation. And, you know, particularly for someone like you who has admitted that you are such a sloppy romantic. Oh, sorry. Sloppy romantic.
Are we keeping that in this? Sloppy. She called me sloppy.
Sloppy romantic. I don't know. Maybe you are a sloppy romantic. Oh, I don't know. Look, thank you so much, Adam.
Oh, thank you, Sammy. It was wonderful talking to you. It was great. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, let me just finish by saying, as I always do, I really hope you find what you're looking for.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me, Sammy. It's been fantastic.
Romantically Challenged was presented by me, Sammy Lucas, in collaboration with Podcast One Australia. Sound production was by Matt Nikolich and the executive producer is Jenny Goggin. For more episodes, go to podcastone.com.au, download the Podcast One app, or look me up on iTunes.